All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast. My name is Tom, part of the Social Podcast Network. A whole bunch of local folks doing local podcasts. Check them out. Great group. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Good morning, good morning, good morning. How are you? How are we? I just got done floating in a hyperbaric chamber. I do another podcast, Rehoboth Social, and the folks from Hyperbaric, Delaware Hyperbarics came on the podcast last week, and they invited me to come check out their hyperbaric chamber, and I was like, okay, why not? Went in Rome. It was great. I'm not sure I feel better. I'm not sure if I feel any different. But I can tell you the experience was magnificent. Hanging out in a tube. It's kind of like going in a... it's weird. It's the same kind of feeling you have when you take off in an airplane, you know, as you climb into altitude and your ears start popping. But they call it a dive. So it's, I guess, more comparable to going down in a submarine. They put you in the steel tube. It's really super cool, though. It's like... has a big mattress in there and like body pillows on each side. You're almost like in a coffin. It's very cool. You have to wear an oxygen mask because you're not breathing oxygen there. So it was awesome. Got to listen to music. I posted a bunch of pictures on the Instagram. You know, just trying to give them a shine a little light on what they're doing. Delaware Hyperbarics, check them out. They're great. Steve and Liz. Yeah, so good morning. I don't know. I don't have much going on. Life is good. Life is fine. I think I shared the other day that I started getting a cold. I'm pretty much in the midst of a cold. And, I don't know how long it's been since I've even been sick. Throw the whole year in with the masks. Finally get both vaccines. And then I get a cold. Typical. I've been kind of talking a lot about that first step. All that stuff. It's important. You know, the first step, I think it comes up in my life every day. And I don't even just mean about alcohol. You know, we admitted we were powerless. That happens all the time. Traffic, you know, traffic is what's kind of hot right now. It's like we're not in the season, but we're not in the winter season, right? We're in spring. Weather's getting better, so what does everybody do? Start doing what? Road work. So now they have all these construction sites everywhere in an area that's already crazy, but I'm powerless over it. I have to admit it. I have no power over this. I can choose my path. Right, I could take a different path if I wanted to. I could choose a different route. That I have power over. But the fact is, these guys got to get their work done. And if I was going to pick a topic or a thing that drives me the most crazy is the powerlessness. You know, I shared the other day that I've been very funky, just super opinionated. I know my education level. I know how much effort I've put into learning certain things. Politics, I've paid zero attention to. I put zero effort into learning more about it. But somehow, I become a freaking expert in it, and I'm very opinionated. One of the things I don't like, one of the weird things to me about politics is, and this is just, me thinking about it, but politics is policy, I guess. You know, if I decide to, the new policy is that each business gets a certain amount of parking spots, right? That's a policy. I couldn't create that policy because I don't own this building. But if I did, we have challenges like every retail area between, you know, parking spots and then parking spots for the employees. And so let's say I just created and this is just an example. Let's say I created a policy that says each business gets three spots, right? Now, that would be a policy. Now, if everybody wanted to talk about that policy, that would be talking about politics, right? If I'm correct. And they can have conversations, and they can get all fired up. I can't believe that this policy has been implemented, and I think it's wrong. And then you have a group that thinks it's right. You know, maybe the customers appreciate the fact that we allow spots for just customers. Employees have to go park somewhere else. Employees are upset. So now we start having conversation and opinions, and then, you know, everyone gets mad at me for creating the policy, and that's, is that politics? I mean, conversation about a policy that I created would be a conversation, a political conversation, I guess. I don't even know. So I guess the question is, are we getting fired up about people's opinions about politics? Or we get, or when, because like when you start having a conversation with somebody and they're like, oh, I don't want to talk about politics. Oh, I don't want to talk about politics. Do you? Or do you just, I don't even know, honestly. It's a stupid topic. The point of it is the powerlessness and recognizing, I guess, you know, recognizing what I'm getting into. I was telling my buddy Carlos, you know, he loves politics. And I said, I think we've, you know, because we've talked about doing a podcast on politics. And I'm like, I think the first thing we need to do is figure out, can we have a conversation about politics? Understanding how the conversation should or could work, and then figuring out if we're talking about politics or if we are talking about our opinions on politics. Because an opinion on politics would be like, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. Employees should have the spots. And then the, you know, the customers are like, I can't believe a business would not have parking for the customers and force their employees to park somewhere else. So now we're having opinions about the policy. And that's where the insanity shows up, I guess. But, you know, it's, you know, there was a time in my life, and it seems to be creeping up now where all of a sudden I'm very opinionated about it. You know, the war on drugs. You know, I said the other day I felt like all drugs should be legal. I kind of feel that way, and then when I thought about it, I was like, well, I don't know. I don't know if crack should be legal. I don't know I don't know, because the first thing that comes to mind is society going to have to take care of these people when their whole life unravels because we've legalized everything? I mean, we kind of deal with that now, right, with alcohol. I mean, alcohol, I think, is the garden for a lot of fucked up crazy plants to grow. Homelessness, drug addiction. You know, I know when my life was in, when alcohol was in my life, my life was slowly unraveling. When I had speed in my life was definitely unraveling. So if it was all legal, instead of going to jail, I guess you go to dry out. I don't know. I don't know how that would work. So maybe making everything legal maybe isn't the right step. But I don't know. Here I go about having an opinion again, right? I guess what I need to figure out is, you know, am I an expert in this? Probably not. I may have shared this before. I remember when I first opened the hair salon and there was a restaurant that was next to me that was really struggling. And I called my buddy Matt, and Matt was definitely in the restaurant business. And I said, I got the solution for their problem. He's like, really? What is it? I said, they should serve breakfast. And I had this whole plan. And he goes, have you ever worked in the restaurant business? And I go, no. And he goes, do you know anything about breakfast? And I go, no. And he goes, you should probably shut the fuck up. And he was right, because it turns out serving breakfast in the morning in a restaurant is one of the hardest meals to serve. Probably because there's a lot of things that usually go along with breakfast, like toast, bacon, sausage, you know, these things, hash browns, right? Some of these things can't be made to order, so you end up making a whole bunch ahead. If you make too much ahead, you hand out cold bacon and eggs or bacon and sausages, and then people get upset, I guess. So his point was, I should shut up because I don't know anything about it. And I have to remind myself, I don't know anything about a lot of these politics. And because I end up getting into it and I start having an opinion and then I start feeling bad because I said something, and it's just a whole nightmare. I go around the first thing that I should do, which is check myself. And then I'm like distraught and upset with myself that I even opened my mouth. Check myself at the door. Avoid all the other shit. The problem is there's no fun in just being like, hey, I don't know anything about politics. I don't know anything about that. I can't talk about it. We like to talk. I love conversing with folks. And 99.9% of the time, it's pretty vanilla. But there's that one time, you know. There's that one subject. You know, I was telling somebody else, a lot of the problems that we have today, we brought upon ourselves. A lot of the problems that I have in my life today, I brought upon myself. You know, we live at the beach. We don't, you know, we have a boardwalk. And at the boardwalk, we have seagulls. And if you're a local person, for the most part, or a person, you know, that spends a lot of time down at the boardwalk, we all know we don't feed the seagulls. Feeding seagulls is fun and exciting. And if it happens just right, you know, a bunch of seagulls are all coming down and it's really cool and you're close to the birds. And, you know, if you get too many, it can be really a thrill almost. But the problem is they're aggressive little bastards. And, you know, you could be sitting down at the beach with a sandwich and a fucking seagull will just come straight out and take your sandwich, right? I've watched my kid sitting there eating his peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a seagull come and just whoop, out, gone. And he just shoves it down its little fucking gullet. So, you know, we know, don't feed the seagulls. Nothing good comes from it. The thrill and the excitement that happens, it's not worth it. But there's those people that come down, right? And they feed the seagulls, and it's a big goddamn mess. And, you know, we have this opinion, I can't believe these people come here and feed the seagulls. And they're like, I don't know why these people need to lighten up. Feeding seagulls is fun. So now you have two groups, and they're heated. But, you know, there was a time where we used to feed the seagulls, and we loved it. But it started to bring more seagulls, and then people started losing their food. And, you know, these, you know, we have French fries, and people were losing their French fries, so we had to start changing our ways. I feel like that's kind of like what we're going through now. And I don't want to compare people to seagulls. But, you know, we have a lot of stuff in this country that industry is relies upon other people doing the work. You know, so people come to the country and do work and are great at it and, you know, I guess like it. I don't know. The industry gets bigger. I was at Giant the other day. I mean, I've never seen a bigger Giant display of pistachios. Almonds, avocados. I mean, we must waste. I don't know how many avocados we waste, but they're all, you know, and I love avocados, but I'll go in there and there'll be a whole tub of them and they're all just bad. But we love them. We love all that stuff. And we love it and we love it. We want more of it, more of it. You know, I remember when I was a kid, we might be able to get an avocado. Now we have giant bins of them. Giant bins of pistachios. You know, one of the biggest water takers in an industry are almonds. Almonds. I mean, we're losing water in California because we have a huge, sensationable appetite for almonds and nuts. More and more. Let's grow more and more. But we need people to pick them. So we bring in these migrant workers, I guess. I don't know. You know, I don't know much about it. I lived in San Diego, so I kind of do know a little bit about it. But it's what I'm gathering. And then war on drugs. You know, the war on drugs. You know, a lot of that was started by DuPont. And the guy that owned the big newspaper, what was his name? Hearst, William Randolph Hearst. Really, William Randolph Hearst and DuPont were big supporters of making cannabis illegal. There was a word created, marijuana. Marijuana supposedly means crazy person on drugs. A lot of propaganda created back in the, whenever it was created. You know, people of color high on marijuana, raping white women, and you know, that would be the beginning of the of making cannabis illegal. And the real reason was because hemp was a big competitor for nylon. And hemp was a huge competitor against paper. And William Randolph Hearst, not only did he have a paper company, but he also had, I mean, a newspaper company, but he also had a paper company. You need paper to put on newspapers, to make newspapers. So, but they still, then, you know, we have this war on drugs. Right, and these countries, these south down to Mexico, these cartels are forcing these people to either mule them drugs across the border, and where are they taking them to? America, United States. Why? Because we use them. So we should stop doing drugs, stop eating almonds, stop eating pistachios. Stop eating avocados. Stop eating and benefiting from all the work that the people that come to this country to do. Or figure out how to make it work. Because it is a... I feel like we created this problem. The war on drugs, I think, created... I don't know. I can't imagine how many people have died due to the war on drugs. And, of course, there's heroin and there's meth and there's cocaine. But, you know, the big one, I think, is probably marijuana. Cannabis. Smuggling cannabis into the United States so that the United States people can smoke it. I mean, at what point do we say, look, maybe we created some of this. Whoops.
Time will rearrange it. Help me, Jesus, help me clean my wounds.
Are you mad at pot? Are you mad at alcohol? Are you mad at drugs? Do you blame the drugs and the alcohol? Because if you still blame that shit, you're fucking confused, man. You're the fault. I'm at fault. You know, I'm a perfectly sober person today. Almost 12 or, you know, 13 years in December, God willing, and the creek don't rise. And I live amongst alcohol. And I live amongst alcoholics. And I'm fine. People say, oh, you know, one of the fucked up part about being sober is trying to hang out with other people. Because they all think that they're going to, like, crack open a beer and I'm going to run to the run to the closet and tilt a bottle up to my lips because I just can't handle it. Unfortunately, I'm probably going, ah, poor person drinking that liquor. You know, I've become judgmental. I need to stop that too. But people are like, you know, we go out to dinner and everybody gets seltzers. It's like, you can have a glass of wine. I don't care. We don't care. This is our journey. This is my serenity. Alcohol was nothing but a small part in it. In fact, getting rid of the alcohol part for me was really the easiest part. I just had to stop buying it and stop drinking it. But trying to figure out how to keep my opinions to myself or reminding myself that I am uneducated in most departments is the hard part. Calling up somebody and saying, hey, man, I wanted to apologize. You know, I had an opinion the other day, and it wasn't really necessary, and I needed to probably restrain from even saying it. And it got a little heated, and I just want to apologize and just tell you that our friendship is super important to me, and I'm sorry. That's hard to do. That's hard to do. You know, I spoke with a guy the other day. He was selling his hair salon. And I think, I don't know if he wanted me to buy the salon. I don't want it. I don't want another salon. I have one and I'm good. But he was talking to me about, you know, the inside, the in and outs of his salon. And inside I kept just wanting to roll my eyes and, you know, how much he was paying these people. And there turns out that the people that he works, that work for him are leaving. And which is nothing new. That happens. It's an unfortunate part of the salon business. You build a group, and then they feel like the grass is always greener, and the one that gets bailed on or the one that gets screwed over in the end is the owner. And but he was telling me, yeah, they're leaving. And I was like, oh, okay. I go, well, why don't you give them, or they, I think they're going to open their own spot. Which makes sense. I mean, as a salon owner, you know, on the up and up, you can only hope that you can bring somebody in, let them build their book, let them build their confidence, let them get to a place where they feel like they want to open their own salon, and then be super supportive and help them. You know, that's the perfect world. But in a self-centered world, you get, I remember when I was working at this salon, and when the boss or the owner, my friend, found out that I was leaving to open my own salon because of the dynamics that was going on in that salon at the time, just the partnership that was going on and the infighting, and it was just super uncomfortable, and I just decided, hey, it's my time. When she found out, she fired me that minute. I was like, oh, okay. Because she was scared. She was full of fear. Oh, my God, I'm losing my people. I mean, you're only as good as your staff, really. And she fired me. And that was fine. And her and I are great friends still. Because, you know, we get, our feelings get hurt. Our pride, our ego. But in a perfect world, she should have been, absolutely, my man, that is awesome. Thank you for being here. Let me know when you're getting ready to go. Whatever we can do to help, let us know. Perfect world, right? But no, she's like, you're fired. Ew. And when I found out that these girls were going to open their own spot, I was like, oh. Perfect World was like, hey, you should just offer them. Because I think he wanted to know if I wanted to buy his equipment. And I just am not in the market for it. I'm not interested in buying more equipment. And I go, you should. Because he's like, I don't care about the money. I didn't do this for the money. And I was like, well, that's a mistake. I mean, you don't want to do it for the money, but you want to, you know, there's, it's like podcasting. You know, we do this, we have a studio. And when I first started doing the network, I was like, just, you know, come podcast, man. Let's do this all together. And one of the podcast people were like, you need to charge. And I was like, oh. So we charge them $50 a month. Keeps them interested. Keeps them honest. You know, if you're paying for something, you care about it, I think, a little bit more. And, but I was like, you know what? You should just maybe give them the equipment. If it doesn't matter, if you don't care about the money, you don't care about any of this, then why don't you just give them the equipment? Well, it turns out they're opening a salon, but it's not until December. And they basically want to just kind of keep him on the hook until they're ready to bail. And then I was like, yeah, that is not, you know, that's not cool. So then I was like, you should get rid of him. Slid back into Tom mode, not David. I don't know. Life on the High Road is a great, there's a great view from the High Road. The air is a little cleaner on the High Road. But if all you do is spend your time looking down at the low road, You're not getting all the benefits from the High Road. And it's tough. It's tough to always take the High Road. We'll see what he does. Let's see. Let's do a little reading. The reality of this podcast is me kind of decompressing myself a little bit. So, you know, it's kind of what's going on today. Daily Reflections. Sorry if I'm stuffed up. I'm sick. Jesus. April 7th. A wide arc of gratitude. All right. And speaking for Dr. Bob and myself, I greatly... No, I already fucked up. All right. And speaking for Dr. Bob and myself, I gratefully declare that had it not been for our wives, Anne and Louise, neither of us could have lived to see AA's beginning. The AA Way of Life, page 67. Am I capable of such generous tribute and gratitude to my wife, parents, and friends, without whose support I might have never survived to reach AA's doors? I will work on this and try to see the plan my higher power is showing me, which links our lives together. Yeah, that's great. My first wife did not stick around. She split. And I've always congratulated her on that. You know, back in the day when this all started, there wasn't a lot of options. You know, wives couldn't leave, unfortunately, or whatever. Fortunately, you know, a lot of wives were stay-home moms or whatever and took care of the house and didn't have a job. So when times got tough, they didn't have the money to restart their lives or the family support or whatever it was. And, but she left because I was a jerk. And luckily today, sober, her and I have a son together. And we have a great relationship. And, you know, I owe it all to this program. I hope everyone has a great day. Hang in there. Bye.